where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
This week on the Strep Throat Show.
It's not strep throat. It's going to get better.
I still like your voice.
Thank you.
I like the raspiness of it. Should go on tour singing some songs. Hey, everybody. We're so happy you gave us time. Let's not waste it. On the show this week, same stuff.
All we do is waste time.
Mm-hmm. Because you know why? Because you're all wasting our time. Not you, our listeners, but the brands that we talk about. Wasting our time. Including this one from KUTV. Headline is, plane makes emergency landing after passenger refuses to stop farting.
This is the first ever story that I handed to Scott and just said, I cannot read this. I can't read that. I can't do it.
A plane flying from Dubai to Amsterdam had to make an emergency landing in Vienna due to a fight between passengers for an unusual reason, according to a report by the International Business Times. The passengers were fighting because one of them refused to stop farting.
Is this in a, like...
The report states that two Dutchmen confronted the passenger next to them about cutting the cheese in an audible fashion. Despite their appeal to both the flight crew and the guilty party, the man continued to let him rip. It's unclear whether he was suffering from a medical condition. After that, the situation escalated and a brawl ensued. That's when the pilot made the decision to land the plane in Vienna, reporting that the passengers were on the rampage. Austrian police removed four people from the flight. However, no arrests were made.
That is the most ridiculous news story I've ever heard.
Look, I can't help it sometimes.
Stop it.
I cannot help it sometimes. Did you see the Emirates Air removed a woman because she was having menstrual cramps?
What does that have to do with being on the plane?
Exactly. They removed her.
How?
She's a flight attendant overheard her telling her seatmate that she thinks it's because of her period. She's not feeling well, but on a scale of 1 to 10, she was a 1 in pain-wise.
Yeah.
And they took her off the plane to get medical attention.
Can she sue them or something?
Yeah, she's working on it.
What kind of medical attention? Mm-hmm. She's a human person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a medical condition.
Oh, here we go. Exactly, right? Let's keep working on these airline stories. Let's here.
Stick to the farters, yeah. People.
That's a legit reason. You got to go.
Yeah,
that's seriously. An enclosed flying test tube, folks. You got to hold that in. Or at least go to the bathroom. Or at least crop dust. Right? You know crop dusting.
No,
right?
Stop. Stop.
You know crop dusting?
My throat hurts. I don't want to raise my voice.
Is that because of crop dusting? Because Wayne crop dusted when he walked in.
God.
Here. Crop dusting is simply walking past people and letting them rip. It's a talent. You need to know these skills. So, this is from mysuncoast.com. It just didn't feel right. Airline agent saves teens from human trafficking plot. That escalated very quickly.
It really changed gears with the airline stories.
This is a good story, though. This is a good, like, a really heads-up story from the airline person. Authorities are crediting an airline employee who trusted her gut instincts to prevent two teenage girls from getting on a flight to meet an online predator. It was just a typical day for American airline agent Denise Miracle when two girls, 15 and 17, came to her ticket counter. The two had a number of small bags, but no ID. I think the way they kept looking back and forth at each other like they weren't really sure, and then they were texting someone on the phone, and that person was giving them answers, she said. Miracle noticed the ticket from Sacramento to New York was purchased online, and the credit card used was a different name. The agent says the whole situation didn't feel right. It was a first-class ticket, very expensive, and I told the supervisor, I'm going to call the sheriff. It just doesn't feel right to me. When deputies arrived, the teenagers told them they met a man called Dre on Instagram, who invited them to New York for the weekend to earn $2,000 for some modeling and music videos. The girls had told each other's parents they were spending the night at each other's house. Deputy Todd Sanderson says the ticket had no return, but the teens didn't know that. They were somewhat flippant about, no, that can't be true, and I said, no, the airline says you have a one-way ticket, and in my belief, you're going back there not to do the things you think you're going to be doing. And they said, I wouldn't let anything happen that I didn't want. And I said, well, you probably wouldn't have a choice in the matter. Authorities quickly investigated Dre on Instagram, but it was too late. We attempted to look up him up on Instagram. Just a few minutes after our contact with him, he erased all of his profiles on social media. Authorities believe this person is an expert at befriending potential victims online and luring them away. They believe the girls would most certainly have become victims. Sanderson said Denise Miracle names suit her. She probably really was the miracle that day, whether they want to believe it or not. Deputies say when they notified the teenage parents, they were in shock. They hope the story is a good lesson for parents to make sure they are keeping a close eye on the children's social media accounts. Wow.
That's terrifying.
And well done, Denise Miracle. That was a good story of an airline and way
it's
to catch them,
though.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. 15 to 17 years old. It's just, oh, Lord. We need a good story.
I have a good story.
Good. That was a good story, but I need a good story on all levels.
This is from the Washington Post. It says, this dad wore a t-shirt at Disney that said, in need of a kidney, and it worked. The idea for the t-shirt was a Hail Mary, a play Rob Lebowski made out of a deep desperation. It's Leibowitz. Leibowitz, 60, had been enduring dialysis for years while his kidneys failed. He was grateful for the treatments that were keeping him alive, but they were 4 hours long, 3 days a week, a challenging commitment for a single father of five working full-time. He needed someone to give him a kidney. The search for the donor was complicated by his blood type, O positive, which makes him a universal kidney donor, but only able to receive a kidney with a person from O type. And his children were not able to donate to him for medical reasons. He was on a list to receive a kidney from a deceased donor at four New York area hospitals, but the waiting was 7 to 10 years long and his health was declining. So basically, he's also a really, really big Disney fan. They call him a Disney fanatic. And so says, most of the time parents go to Disney for their kids, my kids go for me, he said of his children who were between the ages of 15 and 32. So when planning a trip to Disney World for August 2017, Leibowitz came up with the idea to make a shirt asking for a kidney donation. He works for an advertising firm, so he knows a thing or two about how to connect people with messages. I wanted to get off dialysis. I wanted 24 more years with my kids, he said. If I can get one person's attention, that's one more than I have. His daughter designed the t-shirt, and he spent about $35 to get it printed. The white t-shirt had simple black writing on the front and back, in need of a kidney O positive call, and it listed a phone number. Where else am I going to get more exposure than Disney World with hundreds and thousands of people walking around every single day? And maybe I'll get a little pixie dust. At the Disney parks, he saw people were noticing the shirt and taking pictures. In the Magic Kingdom, Leibowitz met Rocchio and Juan Sandoval, who posted the picture of his t-shirt on Facebook. And the happy end of the story is it was shared 33,000 times on the first day, and more than 90,000 times by the end of that week, and within a few days he had been contacted by 100 people. As like all of a sudden the phone was off the hook. He responded to each text, phone call, and Facebook message. He had no clue that something like that would go viral, but it was so successful. Donating a kidney requires a long screening process, including extensive medical tests and a psychological evaluation. Of the people that he contacted, about 50 of them were committed to seeing if they were a match. And it says, after initial testing, three potential donors went to New York for additional testing, which included meetings with psychiatrists, social workers, and a surgeon. There were blood tests, x-rays, and tissue tests, but none of the three were a match. So it says, then Leibowitz heard from Richie Sully, also a single father who has two daughters and lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana. After passing the initial tests, Sully took a 16-hour bus ride to New York for further testing. It could not have gone better. After 4 years of searching, Leibowitz had found a match. He called his kids, everyone was crying, and he found his kidney.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
And they're buddies now. And they hung out, and all these things in common. There's a picture of the two of them in Times Square. And yeah,
it's just like, I mean, it's a fun idea that they did that, but it's just, it's so great that people would do that. Cause like, that's the kind of thing that's not, I mean, donating blood, all you have to do is go and donate blood. Like this is a major commitment and it reduces your own health when you donate the kidney. Like it's a huge thing. It's the kind of thing you do for your kids or your spouse. Like the idea that he would meet someone and a stranger who then obviously became a friend would do it is pretty incredible.
Back to our sometimes common theme of the unnecessary ripping of millennials, Wayne. It's from moneyish.com. It says, the dark reason so many millennials are miserable and broke. I just looked over at Wayne. Social media can send our bank balances and moods plummeting. Millennials spend more time on social media than older generations. People ages 25 to 34 spend 141 minutes per day on it. Versus 105 for the 35 to 44 set.
What was the difference?
141 to 105. So it's a half hour-ish. 36 minutes. And that could be hurting both their finances and mental health.
Oh, gosh.
Indeed, data released this week from Alliance Life shows that more than half of millennials, 57% versus just 28% of Gen X and 7% of boomers, say they've spent money they hadn't planned to because of something they saw on social media. This is partly because millennials say they feel pressure to keep up with their friends' spending. And of those, nearly half say that social media posts of friends' vacations and lifestyles contribute to that pressure, according to 2017 data from TD Ameritrade.
But you can't blame social media for spending money you don't have. Like, all of the older people that are on there, they spend money they don't have because of something that's on the counter at the store, like a million other reasons.
Here's the reason I bring up this article at all, okay?
Okay.
This likely exacerbates, because I wanted to use that word, the already tough financial spot many millennials are in. Millennials, quote, millennials ages 18 to 34, are more likely than any other generation to have nothing saved, according to a 2017 survey from GoBankingRates.com, with nearly half, here it is, ready? With nearly half of young millennials, 18 to 24, having $0 in savings. And most haven't saved appropriately for retirement either.
Who saves for retirement at 18 years old? What the heck kind of statistics are these? I started saving money like 5 years ago.
Wednesday.
Wait, Wayne's putting his hand up.
I started saving Wednesday.
I started saving when I was 16.
Really?
You are that guy, Wayne. You've just skewed the survey.
That can't be common.
But wait, hang on. I'm fascinated by this. So what did you do at 16? You just started putting some money away?
RSP, yeah.
You opened RSP when you were 16.
To be fair, I didn't start it. Yeah. My mom started.
Okay. And you started putting money in, get a little tax breaky in there. Yeah. What you got in there now? Oh. Got a couple
Why
bucks?
Why are we paying Wayne?
Bucks in there.
Yeah? Jeez, she could have paid you the RSP. You know what I have an RSP right now? $212.
Yeah,
but I put $200 once and I never touched it again. It's now $213.
It's still floating around in there.
I'm living off of the power of compound interest right now, kids. And soon we'll have $220.
A ridiculous statistic.
I remember seeing a financial person in my high school said, like, I was like 15 or something. He said, if you put $1,000 away for the next 5 years and then don't touch it, you'll have $1 million at retirement because of the power of, you know, compound interest. I'm like, cool. I have $3 and I'm going to go buy a bag of chips. Why? Because they're really loud and crunchy. That's what I want to do. Yeah. I don't know how many 18-year-olds are going to be saving money. So, yeah. All right. Final article for today. Then we'll let you all go and get you done. And then you can go out for recess.
Washington, go save money.
Washington
Open
Post.
A bank account.
Go talk to Wayne about your financial needs. WashingtonPost.com. The simple solution to smartphone addiction is now used in over 600 U.S. schools. Graham DeGoni, not related to Negronis. Was a music festival at a music festival in San Francisco in 2012 when he witnessed something that disturbed him. A man was dancing.
Is that the end of the story?
Yeah. A man was dancing, uninhibited, perhaps drunk, losing himself in the moment. Some strangers thought it was funny, so they filmed it and uploaded it to YouTube. It's the kind of thing that happens 1,000 times a day, but it bothered DeGoni. Traditionally, as he saw it, people at such festivals would come together to commune, to share a collective feeling that those not present would never be able to participate in, see Woodstock 69 or any Grateful Dead show from the 60s to the 90s. But now everyone had a smartphone. You had to act cool. And that old group intimacy, it was gone. That was a keystone moment for me, said DeGoni, 31, and it raised a key question. What degree of privacy can we expect in a public sphere? The topic is complicated, but the answer he came up with is simple. Ditch the phones. He founded a company, Yonder, whose small gray pouches swallow phones and lock them away from the fingers and eyes of their addicted owners. Since it started in 2014, hundreds of thousands of neoprene pouches have been used across North America, Europe, and Australia. People entering a school, courtroom, concert, medical facility, wedding, or other event are asked to slip their phones into the pouches when they enter. Once locked, the phones stay with their owners until they are ready to leave the premises, and the devices are released from their tiny prisons at an unlocking base. The pouches can be rented for a single event or on extended leases. They are now used in more than 600 schools. The effects are immediate. At first, people seem agitated and unsure what to do with their hands, but then they adjust. In line at the concession stand, you'll overhear people talking about the artist and the show, and then about the fact that they're having this conversation because they don't have phones. You'll see people fully engaged with each other talking, and the feel is radically different. At San Lorenzo High School in California, which the school year began requiring students to yonder, yes, it's a verb, their phones from the beginning of first period until the end of last, the difference had been stark. Grades have gone up, discipline problems have plummeted, said Principal Allison Silvestri. Referrals for defiance and disrespect are down 82%, she said, adding that before Yonder, most of them stemmed from arguments between students and teachers over phone use in class. There's also another effect. The campus is really loud now, Silvestri said. Students are interacting, talking to each other, reading, kicking a ball, socializing because they're not standing in a circle texting each other. And it goes on with
for
those.
Kids,
so we've talked about this in the past.
And for kids, I 100% agree.
Dave Chappelle
yeah.
show did that. A couple Chris Rock had done that at shows.
I cannot believe that kids are allowed to have their phones in school. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I heard that our kids could have phones in high school, it blew my mind. I think that you should not, there's no way you should be allowed to have your phone out in class. There's no way. And you shouldn't, you should get definitely get your phone taken away if you they the teacher looks over and you've got your head staring down at your crotch or whatever. That's I can't believe that they're ever allowed to use their phones. You shouldn't be allowed to listen to music in class. It all takes away from your attention.
Yeah, 100%.
And then there's a part of me that understands why in high schools, particularly, the kids need to learn how to use their phones to schedule. And I think it would be okay if at the end of every class, for 2 minutes at the end, if they had to take pictures of homework or whatever, then I don't have a problem with that. But the idea that a teacher would stand in front of a room of kids and have to deal with not only the general work of getting the attention of all of these kids and teaching them, but also having to fight the entire world of distraction that can come on a phone, I think that's ridiculous.
I agree. When I was teaching at college, this was just when the school became connected, so everybody had laptops. And back then, it was MSN Messenger. That was your iMessage then, right? That was your chat back then. And I had it where it was just near the tail end of me finishing teaching. It was in the 2009, 2010, and I just told the students, look, everybody has to close their laptop. If I had a laptop when I was in college and it was active in chat, I'm like, I wouldn't listen to the teacher at all. It wasn't the fault of the teacher, right? It's the fault of the more interesting, these little Jack Russell Terriers jumping up and down notifications on your laptop. I said, I'm going to make, so at the point I had to make them a deal. I would teach for an hour and a half of the 3 hour class or 2 hours of it, all content, all because my stuff ran off a discussion. And I would leave the last hour of class open for open laptop time. And then I'd leave. I'd be gone.
But you shorten the class. But like you can.
Because the problem is, okay, what happened? No, because when I said you can't use your laptops, they went to the student union and said you can't do that.
Yeah.
It's a connected course and we should be able to take. I'm like, listen, if you want to take notes on your laptop, you take notes. But that's not the case. And what happens is I never have a problem with people using their phones adult-wise and everything else. But when it distracts somebody else, that's when I have a problem. When you're chatting with somebody, typing to somebody, watching a video, looking at something, especially, and I can see it. When I'm on stage, I can see who's on their phone. I can see if it's a darkened room, it lights it up. I can see people beside them looking over just because that's what you do, because there's something in your peripheral vision.
And I think in that story, the problem is that somebody was making fun of somebody else and posting a video of them on YouTube. Yeah. That is a huge problem.
Yeah.
But that isn't about necessarily having devices at events. Like, that's a different problem, I think. I do understand what they're saying. I've never heard it explained that way about this idea of openness and inclusion and that you don't have to worry that someone's going to make fun of you so you can relax and enjoy yourself. There's a bigger problem there. I like that this service at least lets you keep your phone with you. That was always what I didn't like about the ones where you had to, like, put it in a box or something because, you know, my feeling is that's kind of a problem. As a parent, it's very rare that I can be out at a concert and not have my phone with me because something could happen, you know, so school or a babysitter or the children themselves could have to get in touch with us. And so there's not that many times that I can be totally without a phone unless I have everyone with me and I can see them. So I'm kind of see the other side of it too. I think we need to teach people not to be jerks. Like, it's a manners issue. Like, if it's to your teacher, it's to a speaker, it's to a musician, like, you're just being rude.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it should be illegal to post a video of someone making fun of them. Like, it just should be wrong. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. It's not the phone's problem that person's an idiot. But young minds, I think different. I feel differently about young minds. Like, I feel like once you're an adult and you're a jerk, that's on you. But when you're a kid and you're allowed to be a jerk, that's on the adults that are in the room. Like, you need to put a line down between. And if you're talking about college courses, and the kids are 17 years old, 18 years old in those college courses, and my feeling is they should have to put their laptops away. They're paying to learn something, and that's your decision. So I feel like for kids it's different, but it's one of the many double standards I believe in.
And, of course, the awkward part now is you're listening to this on your phone.
Yeah, who are you being read to while you're listening to us?
Yeah.
Your spouse? Your kids?
Turn the show off. It's over, so you can turn it off.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.